This is the Ontario Family Law Podcast, featuring issues related to marriage, separation, divorce, and some child welfare issues. It's a companion to the book, A Guide to the Basics of Ontario Family Law, which is available as a paperback or as an ebook at Amazon, Kobo, or the Apple iBookstore. My name is John Schumann. I am a certified specialist in family law, and I am a family litigation lawyer, mediator, arbitrator, and collaborative lawyer, and I am the partner leading the family law group at Devery Smith Frank, LLP. Today on the podcast, we are covering how property is divided when common law couples separate. One of the most frequent mistakes people make about Ontario family law is that becoming common law is exactly the same as being married. In previous podcasts, I've explained how that is simply not the case. Being common law is very different from being married. One of the biggest ways that is different is with respect to property division. If you are common law, do not assume that everything is divided 50-50. How common law couples divide their property at separation was a topic at a recent family law seminar. To start, our student, Michelle Farb, explained how property equalization works under Ontario's Family Law Act for common law couples.
The Family Law Act in Ontario defines spouse as either of two persons who A, are married to each other, or B, have together entered into a marriage that is voidable or void in good faith on the part of a person relying on this clause to assert any right. Therefore, when we apply this definition to issues of property division and equalization of net family property, we are forced to come to one conclusion. Common law couples do not equalize their property when they separate under Ontario law. Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle. You'd be surprised how many common law couples come and expect to get half of their spouse's stuff. And it doesn't happen. But that's not the end of the story because we're lawyers. Long, long before family law, there was recognition that the law was not fair. So what happened? People who thought the law was really unfair started making these applications to the Chancellor of the Exchequer. This is in England. This is a long time ago, saying, this was really unfair. Can you please help me? And what happened eventually is the Chancellor of the Exchequer got tired of getting so many letters. And he set up this thing called the Chancellery Courts, which are courts of these things called equity. And the courts of equity do fairness. The courts of law do law. Now, some people think that sounds a little bit odd that you would have a legal court that isn't fair at all. But in reality, that's the way the law sort of worked. And the way, if you're a common law couple, you may feel the law works if you separate and you have your spouse has all the stuff and you're left with nothing. We had these two courts, one which looked after things that were fair, and one that looked after the law. And in 1881, so we're not nearly so long time ago, but still long before there was actual family law, the Ontario Judicature Act merged the Court of the Chancellery with what was then the Supreme Court of Ontario, which is now the Ontario Court, the Superior Court of the Ontario Court of Justice. And what happened was one court could then apply rules of law and rules of fairness. And that sounds a little bit better, because when you're going to a judge, the judge is not just going to say, this is the law, doesn't matter if it's fair. The judges can say, well, that's not fair, but maybe we can apply some fairness to your situation. And when the law was unfair, the same court could try to fix it. That does not mean that it could do everything that it wanted to, but it could try to do some fixing of where there was problems with the law. And an important thing to understand is that when we're talking about claims in equity, which is this idea of fairness, we're not just talking about family law cases. We're talking about every case. So any person can make a claim in equity to another person's property. So if you feel that the person next to you is drinking coffee that you got from the room and you're entitled to that coffee because it's unfair that they drink it, you could, in fact, make a claim in equity against that cup of coffee to the person next to you. You may not want to do that because going to court is probably worth more than the cup of coffee, but that's the idea. Where we see this a lot in family law is legal title. The equalization process does not divide up who owns things. People still own the things that are in their name. When you separate, if your spouse has got the house in their name, the house is theirs, and they get to keep it subject to owing you money. If you own the car, and it's the only car, and it's a really nice car, and your spouse wants it, and at the end of the marriage, it's kind of too bad, because unless they pay for you, it's your car. But sometimes what happens, and this is a real problem for common law couples, is that you have a common law couple where both, they've been together, they act like they're married, they've lived together for a long time, they share everything. Sometimes one of them is self-employed and therefore has some worry about being subject to lawsuits. And the other couple, or the other spouse, is employed in a government job and is never going to get sued no matter what happens. So they put the house and the RRSPs and the RESPs and most of everything in the employed partner's name. Self-employed person has some down hard time in their business. They lose a lot of money. They now have no money. The employed partner still has money. They have everything in their name. And so they say, you know, now's a really good time for you to leave because I've got all the money and you've got none, so goodbye. And that is would be, as I think most people think, unfair, especially if it's a long relationship. But under the law, the person who has owns all the property, owns the house, owns the RRSPs, owns the car, they get to keep them. And because common law couples do not utilize family property, there's nothing at law that the person who is the other common law spouse can do. That is where the idea of equity comes in. Now, this is where things get a little different again. How on earth does a gold mine apply to separating common law couples? Gold mine in north of Thunder Bay that was owned by International Corona has everything to do with common law couples. Because what happened is there was this small company called International Corona that had the rights to this land that had a lot of gold in it. And they went to talk to this company called LAC Minerals, which is a big multinational company that owned tons and tons of stuff. And they said, you know, we don't really know how to mine gold, but we've got this piece of property that has a lot of gold in it. And so can you give us some help? And so the people from LAC Minerals came down, they gave them a lot of advice. International Corona was very thankful, said thanks for coming and helping us so much. The people from LAC Minerals went back to, I think it was Toronto. They realized that International Corona owned only the title for that property. LAC Minerals bought all the mineral rights to the property right off and then started mining the gold using the information they got from International Corona. And International Corona thought that was unfair. They sued LAC Minerals, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court agreed, and the Supreme Court said that this is a situation where we're going to apply what's called a constructive trust. This is a thing that common law couples hear a lot about, constructive trust, because this was so unfair, and it's not contrary to law, we're going to fix it. And what we're going to say is that LAC Minerals, because LAC Minerals by then had taken all their assets and invested it into the property to get all that gold out, LAC Minerals, everything you have that's in relation to that gold, which turned out to be all of LAC Minerals at that point, which is a multi-billion dollar company, is now you hold in trust for this little company called International Corona, which had then had net worth after the lawsuit probably like $25,000. How does that apply to common law couples? Well, if you think of the International Corona and LAC Minerals being a common law couple, you can see where one spouse does a lot for the other spouse's house, the other person's retirement savings, the other person's cottage, puts everything they have into it, and then the spouse who actually owns it or has somehow gets the rights to it says, goodbye, thanks for what everything you've done, I'm getting out of here. In order to correct that unfairness in title, you have to have special property, which is why I brought up LAC Minerals. You don't always get this remedy except where you have one piece of property that is special to both spouses or both parties to the case. So in this case, there was a gold mine, and that's where the gold was, and giving International Corona anything else wouldn't really work. You have to have one side that's taken advantage of the legal title to become enriched. So in the world of common law couples or in married couples, what happens is one spouse has let the other spouse paint the house, pay the mortgage, look after the lawn, pay for the renovations, maintain it, clean it, do all sorts of things above what that person would ordinarily have to pay to live there, on the belief that it was actually going to be their house together. And so the person who's entitled has become enriched by all that contribution, all that effort, and it can be money or it can be personal effort. As a result of that, in order to succeed in this, the other person has to be deprived. This is the kind of an easy one for common law couples because the person gets kicked out of the house with no rights to the house anymore. They're deprived of everything they put into that house. And there has to be no juridical reason, which is like no reason at law for the enrichment. That means that there can't be a good excuse for having kept all the other person's money and every other person contributed to the house. A common way with married couples or common law couples where this happens is rent. if a person's contribution has to be more than they would pay to rent to live in the house. Because if you just pay towards a house what you would pay for rent, the other side really hasn't gotten anything and you haven't really been deprived of anything. There are rules in equity. The law of equity is not the Wild West. So you cannot just say, this is unfair, I think the law that I should apply to equity and get something back. Some of the rules are that equity does what ought to be done. So if it's not obviously unfair, then you're not going to get your claim for a trust or any other thing to remedy your property situation. Equity will fix things that are wrong. So if someone gets really screwed over, this is a way to fix it. But equity cannot defeat the law. And this is an important thing to remember. You cannot make a claim in equity that's contrary to a claim in law. The reason you can do this for common law couples is because, as Michelle pointed out, the statute just sort of leaves how common law couples divide their property up in the air. The Ontario statute does not say common law couples do not share in each other's property. So you can step in with equity to fix that problem. You can also step in with equity to fix a problem where both people contribute to an asset that it grows a lot after the date of separation, and it's unfair for one person to get all that growth because there's no law against that. And an important one, and this is really important for people in family law, to remember that the person who's making the claim for this fairness has to come to court with clean hands, which means they have to act right, which means they can't act like a lot of family law litigants do. They can't be deliberately devious. They can't lie. They can't cheat. They can't steal. They can't do things to get their other spouse screwed over by the police, by tax person, any of those things. If you want to get equity, you have to come to court with clean hands, which means you have to behave properly in your separation. If the reason you're not getting something is because you were stupid and lazy and you didn't bother to do what you should have done, equity doesn't help you because it's not fair to reward people for being lazy. There are a whole bunch of other rules in equity that you need to know about, which is why if you want to make one of these claims to fix a problem in property, you need to speak to a lawyer.
Why don't you have your lawyer call my lawyer?
One of the big rules that came up in 2011 is another Supreme Court case called Karen Baranow. And this opens the door on what you can claim because there was a recognition that in a common law, not marriage, but looks a lot like a marriage, sometimes what happens is one spouse devotes all their time to the business and they build the business up and make a ton of money. And the other spouse looks after the kids, looks after the bills, looks after the home, takes time off work when the children are sick, cooks all the meals for the other parent, arranges the other spouse's appointments, gets them to the doctor, makes sure their car is looked after, does all that stuff. So that one spouse can just make tons of money. And that's the principle on which marriage works, that at the end of marriage, where that happens, you divide up everything equally. But if you're common law, that doesn't happen. So along came a case from the Nova Scotia where that sort of thing had happened, where one spouse had built up the business to be worth a lot of money, and the other spouse had given up everything to look after the family, and the spouse was building up the business to make lots of money. The Supreme Court said, that's not really fair. We can extend the application of these equitable principles to say that this idea of a joint family venture. And this idea of this business was that it was a common law family thing to do together with one spouse looking after it directly and one spouse looking after it indirectly by making sure the first spouse was okay. When that happens, you can still get a share in the asset that it would otherwise not be shared because you're a common law, but only if certain aspects apply. One is that both parties have to have had building this business being a mutual intention, which means they intended to do what I just said about having one spouse look after the business, one spouse look after the family. There has to be economic integration, which means you cannot have spouses saying, much mine is mine, what's yours is yours throughout the relationship, because otherwise it was clear that they knew what they were doing when one spouse stayed home and they were freely giving up the money. The parties had to intend to share what they were getting. And again, one party has to sacrifice themselves in order to make this claim. There are other things you can do in equity. We talked about a constructive trust and how you can say, and what if I didn't make it clear, a constructive trust is where the court finds or people agree that one spouse holds a piece of property in whole or part for another person. It can be that one spouse, in the case of the home, one spouse who has 100% title actually owns 50% of that house in trust for the other spouse, in which case both spouses technically own 50% of the house. Some other things that can come up in equity are express trusts. Express trusts are just where you can find evidence that, especially with common laws, where throughout the relationship, the parties said, this is our house. It didn't matter who had title. They treated it as our house together. They never, ever, ever made it seem like the house belonged to one of them. And the spouse who was on title actually referred to as being our house, or said things like, this is our house together. Now, you need that in writing to prove it, because, you know, no one believes what people remember. But if a person says that, then you can get a trust, regardless of what the contribution was. Resulting trust is sort of the opposite, where the spouse, and this happens in common law couples a fair amount, where the person who makes all the money owns the business. They put the house in their common law couple's common law spouse's name, who's the employee. And at the end of it, the spouse who has the property says, thanks for having the relationship. I'm leaving now that you gave me the house. Well, there's this idea called a resulting trust, which says that the person who gave the property in those sorts of circumstances clearly meant that the person who was giving it meant it to come back. And quantum merit is that you just get paid for your effort. Some things that might be better and simpler to fix common law relationships are spousal support, because spousal support specifically recognizes the economic consequences of the marriage breakdown. So when one spouse gets screwed, spousal support can step in and fix that. Equalization for married couples works better than trust remedies. You can't really claim a trust remedy for the appreciation of the value of an asset during a marriage. Sometimes there can be some particular circumstances that you say that really works out to be unfair. You should talk to a lawyer about that. But generally, the equalization process is thought to fix things for married couples. So those are the ideas of trust law. In the book, I mentioned that if you think something is unfair and there might be some sort of claim in equity, talk to a lawyer. Because if you understood this, good for you. Most people don't. A lot of lawyers don't. Family lawyers deal with this a lot, so chances are that they do. But this is a really complex, silly area of not law, because it's equity, that involves understanding how a chancellor was thinking in the 1700s, 1600s, 1500s. And to understand that, you really need to speak to a family lawyer who studied it in law school for a few years.
Obviously, being common law can make property division much more complicated on separation. You may have no entitlement in law to share in anything that you and your partner accumulated during the marriage. But if you just walk away, you may be giving up too much. If you have, or are about to, separate from your common law spouse, speak to a family law lawyer to determine what your rights and obligations are in your particular circumstances. This has been the Ontario Family Law Podcast on Property Division for Common Law Couples. My name is John Schumann. I'm a family law lawyer practicing in Toronto, Ontario. You can reach me by calling 416-446-5847 or through our website, which is www.devrylaw.ca. That's www.devrylaw.ca. Look on our website or on iTunes for many other podcasts in this series. We will talk again soon about other family law and children's rights issues. Thanks again for listening.